Good day. I'm
roll
Doug
camera.
McKenzie. Take off roll
I
camera.
I want to do that.
There's no camera in here.
Roll tape.
I got to give them my theory on movies, eh?
Where's Beers?
I'll find him.
Level 5.
Plus, he had a mutant.
Okay, so good day. Welcome to Strange Brood, the Fleshy-Headed Minute. I'm Lee McCormick, and this is my co-host, BJ Cramp.
How's it going, eh?
And today's topic is episode 45, minute 40.
That song's making him fight, eh?
Yeah, do it again.
Delvecchio has heard Gretzky here in the dressing room not find out what's done.
Pulford and Ullman have been fighting terribly, of course. Frank Mohamed, one of the strongest guys in the league, he made out okay, but what a fight.
Well, now somebody has thrown an octopus on the ice and Litzenberger and Salmon are going...
So Doug is playing that hoser theme on the keyboard for the guys, right? Let me hit it again here. Where's my volume? Give me some volume on that. Yeah, here we go. So he's playing that. Right? And the guys are starting to fight, right? So he's like, yeah, do it again. kind of thing.
That really sounds like something you might hear at the game.
Yeah, it's like a charge, like charge. Yeah. It's like one of those things kind of thing, right? So a little bit about that hoser theme, right? Remember on the introduction episode, so long ago that we did that, but we're talking about where the origin of that theme came from. Was there was like this like an Ontario film board kind of thing where they would show these little shorts on TV and they would have like the loon on a lake and they would play this kind of like whistle kind of kind of whistle theme, right? So that's where they came up with this kind of four or five note kind of jingle thing.
Yeah, I love that.
Right? And it's always Doug's, right? Doug's always the guy to deliver. You never hear Bob singing or play it.
No.
Right? So
yeah.
It's cool that Doug is playing it here on the keyboards. Right? It's like a new version.
Sing it.
I got a thing in my throat.
I'll do it. No! Do it. My job. Holy jeez.
It's my new version.
It's as if they said we need theme music for our show, Great White North, and then Doug just did that.
He's just like, yeah, I'll just kind of sing it. Yeah. It's cool seeing these the hockey players fight to their theme, right? And it's,
yeah, they say beauty.
Beauty, yeah. And in the juxtaposition, they like cut to the arena and they see the players fighting and you hear the theme coming out of the arena speaker this time, right?
Yeah.
And the juxtaposition of the hoser theme on the synth and the sound of the players fighting with the equipment and the sticks and the skates banging back and forth, right?
And this seems like this would have been valuable knowledge for Ted. That the Great White North.
Yeah, that's the theme. Obviously, they've discovered it. Yeah, this is the theme that's going to like get them to fight. There, you know, four notes.
This is the world domination. This is what they need for world domination. The hoser theme.
Yeah. So Bob and Doug, as they're playing this theme, they're looking up and they're seeing the players fight. Right. So they start commentating the action, like calling the action on the ice. Right. Like hockey.
Yeah, I was hoping that you were going to be able to tell us who all these names are.
Oh yeah,
I got a lot of names.
They got a lot of lists here. So let's go first with the first line. We have Delvecchio has hurt Gretzky. Right. So obviously Gretzky, Wayne Gretzky, greatest.
Yeah, I know those names. Yeah.
Gretzky's the greatest player to ever play hockey.
I love the look on Rick Moranis' face.
Yeah.
The way they've gone into this Well, both of them. The looks on their faces and the way they're talking.
Yeah, they're
the way they've got into these hockey announcer.
Yeah, like these old guys in suits and they're ensconced up their faces kind of thing. Like,
this is hilarious. This is really, really funny.
That's the SCTV coming out of them. Their kind of improv skills when they go into their impersonations, right? They got to do the facial expression to
deliver
the voice.
They're calling the game. It's really hilarious. I love it.
So Del Vecchio, I believe, is Alex Del Vecchio. He played for the Red Wings. Now, all the names they drop here are like dudes from like the 60s, 70s.
Right. I figured. Like, I know one is Frank Mohamed, right?
Frank Mohavlich. He comes up next. The next line is, well, Pulford and Ullman have been fighting terribly, of course, right? So Pulford is Bob Pulford. He played for the Leafs 57 to 70, right? So I'm also thinking, too, because there's also, you know, another guy, different guys with the same last names.
Right.
But I'm assuming it's their era of hockey players, and it's like Toronto guys, right? So,
yeah.
So probably Bob Pulford, Leafs in the 60s. He played for the Leafs there. Ullman is Norm Ullman. He played for the Red Wings in the 60s. Norm Ullman, yeah, and he played for the Leafs late 60s, early 70s. And then the next line, he's like, Frank Mohavlich. He's one of the strongest in the league. You know, he made all right, but what a fight. What a fight. Now, Frank,
how is that spelled? That
Mohavlich is Frank, and then
Mohavlich.
Mohavlich.
Okay.
So Mohavlich.
Mohavlich. Okay.
Yeah. So Frank Mohavlich is a legend. He's great, right?
I wrote down Frank Mohamed.
So
Mohavlich.
Yeah. So Frank
played much more of a Canadian hockey name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Frank played for the Leafs in the 57 to 68. He was on the last Stanley Cup team of 67.
These are all from when they were kids.
Yeah.
Like when, yeah.
Kids, guys, yeah. Like, yeah, this is the 80s, but they're all calling their hockey heroes when they were young, right?
Right.
Frank went to the Red Wings after the Leafs, and then he was on the Canadiens in the early 70s there.
Mohavlich start to square off. They drop the gloves, and they go at it. They do. Good right by Frank. O'Reilly likes the left. O'Reilly and Frank Mohavlich.
O'Reilly and Frank Mohavlich going at it. The referee and the two linesmen standing aside as O'Reilly throws that left.
So, that's awesome. Right? So then Bob's like, oh, now someone has thrown an octopus on the ice.
Yeah, is that a reference to something?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Why?
That's the thing. So the backstory on that is this happened and started in Detroit, and it was a playoff thing, right? They still do it now, but the deal was the way the playoffs used to be set up, I think it's different now. There's like three or four rounds and semifinals, but back then there was like the semifinals and the finals because, well, back then it was only six teams. And then later in the 60s, early 70s, they expanded. But there were still not enough teams to warrant like 16 games to win the cup. So if you were in the playoffs, it took 8 wins to get the cup, right? So 2 series, best of 7, 4 wins for each. 8 wins will get you the cup. So throwing the octopus on the ice represented the 8 arms, the 8 wins kind of thing.
For over 50 years, it has been one of sport's most unique traditions. Attending or watching a playoff game in Detroit is synonymous with seeing an octopus thrown on the ice. It began in the 1952 Stanley Cup playoffs. The Red Wings needed 2 series wins to capture their second cup in 3 seasons. The Cusimano brothers owned a fish market on Detroit's east side and had an idea. Their rationale was that the 8 arms of the octopus symbolized the number of playoff victories it took to win the cup in that era. They thought tossing an octopus would bring good luck. So on April 15th, 1952, they did just that at the old Detroit Olympia. The brothers became local heroes and continued to sell octopi for the tossing. The Red Wings went on to win 2 of the next 3 Stanley Cups. Even after moving to Joe Louis Arena in 1980, the practice stayed alive. In a 95 playoff game, a 30-pounder was among 36 octopi thrown. Though the team needs more than 8 wins for a championship, the tradition continues to this day.
It's ridiculous, but it's one of those things that just kind of stuck, right? So even
And then he says something about Litzenberger.
Yeah, he's like, that's another, like, he's calling more fights. He's like, Litzenberger and Salming, right? So Litzenberger... Litzenberger was the one I had to look up. I didn't know this guy's name. So I'm guessing Ed Litzenberger played for Montreal, Chicago, Detroit, Toronto, like four of the original six teams from 52 to 64. But,
oh, yeah.
But the thing that's I'm wondering, because it's Litzenberger and Salming, right? So Salming is Boris Salming, one of my favorite players from Sweden, number 21. He played for the Maple Leafs in the 70s and the 80s, right? So they got like a 70s and 80s Leafs guy against Litzenberg from the 50s. So I don't know. I don't know if it's the same Litzenberg, but but yeah, it's a great scene, man. Great scene.
Oh, I love it. It's, yeah, classic.
So as they're commentating this, we hear two gunshots, right? Dart guns. They stop mid-sentence, the play-by-play commentary there, and they both kind of freeze, Bob and Doug, and they collapse backwards, revealing Brewmeister Smith and Claude standing there behind them in their clothes with their guns held there, right? Now, Brewmeister Smith, if you notice here, he's poised with his guns, kind of like James Bond, right? So he's got like two hands on this dart gun, and he's got it kind of up by his shoulders, pointing in the air like he's posing with this gun, right? You look at Claude, he's shocked and bewildered at what he's doing. He's like, I don't know what I'm doing here. He's still frazzled by the whole scene here.
And these guys are wearing armor, so I was wondering where the darts actually hit.
Where they shot, they hit them right in the back of the neck or something like that?
Yeah, they would have had yeah, it would have, Claude had to be a pretty good shot with that dart gun.
Yeah.
Because there weren't a lot of places to hit these guys. Yeah.
Maybe they did lower leg above their ass, like that's, maybe there's a split between their the trunks and the shirt or the back plate or something like that, right?
It's like Smog.
Yeah.
Where there was that little spot on Smog the Dragon where they had to hit him with the arrow.
We have suspenseful music by Charles Fox here, score. And then it fades to that loading dock. I remember earlier, Brewmeister Smith came about loading them down on the loading dock and in the kegs and stuff like that, right? So we see Claude, he's in his back in his street clothes, right? He's in that burgundy suit, right? And he's on a forklift now. He's loading beer kegs off of a skid pallet onto the back or into the back of Bob and Doug's van. Behind the forklift, we see other beers on the stacked up there. We see there's Labatt's Blue, Labatt's 50. I think there's Budweiser there. Obviously, lots of Elsinore beer, right? So, yeah, that's where this minute ends. We see Claude, he gets up on the actual raised skid pallet there, and he's kind of wheeling the kegs into the van, right?
I like how obviously Brewmeister's making Claude do all the work.
Yeah, we don't see Brewmeister here at all.
No. Brewmeister's like, put him in kegs, load him in the van, and then he just left and then left Claude to do it all.
And he was probably like, hey, Ted would have been here to help, but you shot him, so you got to do all the work now or something like that. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's where this minute ends. We roll in those kegs into the van. We also see I mentioned the red bubble wrap on the back of the van windows? We see that again.
Well, and obviously we can assume that in those kegs are Henry and Pam Elsinore.
That's right. They were saying they were going to load them into the kegs. So,
yeah.
What are they up to, man? This is diabolical. Seriously, right?
Yeah.
And that's going to do it for this minute, and we'll talk to you hosers next time.
Take off.
Okay, that clears up a lot of things for me.